This show begins with a quiz. It's about Israel and one other country, and your job is to guess which one. Ready? Here we go. In 2006, when Hamas won democratic elections, this country was the first to cut all aid to the Palestinian Authority. In 2009, during Israel's attack on Gaza, the UN Human Rights Council passed a resolution condemning the attack. This country was the only one that stood with Israel in that vote. When Hugo Chavez expelled Israel's ambassador over the Gaza attack, this country said that it would take over representing Israel in Venezuela. All right, which country are we talking about? If your guess was the United States, you would be wrong. The correct answer is Canada. In the past 4 or 5 years, Canada has emerged as Israel's most fervent supporter on the international stage. Meanwhile, here inside the country, there's a battle going on between a powerful pro-Israel lobby close to the conservative government and a growing Palestinian solidarity movement that sees Israel as an apartheid state and is calling for boycott, divestment, and sanctions. On this episode of Fault Lines, we take you inside the debate over Israel and Canada, the other special relationship. Canada has long been known as a mediator. And it makes sense, sandwiched between its colonial parent, the United Kingdom, and its imperial big brother, the United States, the country has often played the diplomatic role of the middle child. But when it comes to policy towards Israel, particularly under Conservative Prime Minister Stephen Harper, the government of Canada has given up any pretense of neutrality and has very publicly picked one side.
Let me tell you, friends, our government believes that those who threaten Israel also threaten Canada. We have stood with Israel even when it has not been popular to do so, and we will continue to stand with Israel just as we have said we would.
What's behind this position? And what implications does it have for Canada and its role in the eternal debate about the Middle East? To try to answer those questions, we talk to people with a wide spectrum of views, from leaders in the mainstream Canadian Jewish community to leaders in the Palestine Solidarity Movement. And there is one point, one, where we found wide agreement.
The Harper government is showing unconditional support to Israel.
This prime minister is probably the most supportive on Jewish issues in general than any prime minister that I can think of.
Even more, believe it or not, than the American government, which is hard to fathom, but it's true.
I think it's a great relationship. I think it's about time.
There's no doubt Israel is very pleased with the position that the Canadian government takes.
Canada's shift to an enthusiastically pro-Israel foreign policy actually began in 2005 with Liberal Prime Minister Paul Martin. But in the Harper era, there have been a series of historic moments in which Canada made its loyalties clear. In 2006, when Israel faced international outcry over the civilian cost of its war on Lebanon, Canada was in its corner.
Israel has a right to defend itself. I think Israel's response under the circumstances has been measured.
During Israel's attack on Gaza in December 2008, Canadian cabinet ministers suggested that the burden of responsibility lay with Hamas for firing rockets. And on the day when Israeli commandos killed 9 members of the Gaza Freedom Flotilla, Israel's prime minister shared a photo op with Stephen Harper in Ottawa before rushing home to deal with the fallout.
Prime Minister, as I told you, Canada deeply regrets this action, the loss of life and the injuries that have occurred.
People like to think of Canada as the peace broker, the kind ones that are honest brokers in the situation. Unfortunately, that is changing very fast.
Canada has abandoned the idea that it has to be a so-called honest broker and that it can adopt what it regards as a more principled position and openly take the side of one competing faction or the other.
So why has Canada abandoned its neutral tone when it comes to the Middle East? On one level, it's about domestic politics. The Jewish community in Canada is only 1% of the population, but it has traditionally voted for the opposition Liberal Party. Clinging to a minority in the House of Commons, the Conservatives are courting any advantage to try to swing a majority in the next election. But people on both sides of the debate say it's less about politics and more about worldview.
I would have to say that this government in particular has its own principles. And therefore, Israel as an ally in the battle against terrorism falls into the thinking of the conservative government.
There's a very right-wing government in Israel. There's a very right-wing government here. They have the same economic interests in terms of military trade. Canada does over $1 billion of free trade with Israel. A lot of it is military.
Frankly, none of it adds up. There's this 100% knee-jerk, automatic, support for Israel, and worse even, I guess, in my view, the notion that any criticism of the Israeli government, which at the moment happens to be one of the most reactionary, racist, violent governments in the world, any criticism of them is de facto anti-Semitism.
The Harper government denies that it's trying to silence criticism of Israel. But it has been aggressive in dealing with those it claims are anti-Israel. Immigration Minister Jason Kenney spearheaded a government effort to ban British MP George Galloway from entering Canada for a speaking event. According to Kenney, the fact that Galloway led an aid convoy to Gaza made him a supporter of terrorism. Here's how Kenney describes Galloway.
A major financier of the anti-Semitic death cult called Hamas.
A federal judge disagreed. In a scathing ruling, the court found no evidence that Galloway was a security threat or supporter of terrorism, and determined that the government tried to ban him because it dislikes his political views. Galloway rushed to Canada to savor the last word in the episode.
It cannot be in Canada's interests to reduce itself from a country that was once admired, respected, even loved in the world, to being no more than an embassy for Benjamin Netanyahu in world affairs.
The Conservative government has also cut funding to organizations that it claims are anti-Israel. Millions were withdrawn from UNRWA, the UN agency that provides basic services to Palestinian refugees. Millions more were cut from a Toronto program for teaching English to new immigrants. It was run by the Canadian Arab Federation, a vocal critic of the government's Israel policy. Another target in this battle took many Canadians by surprise, a venerable aid organization called Kairos.
It's a distinguished coalition of non-governmental organizations drawn from mainstream Christian faith communities across the country, about 14 groups in all. Has a history of formidable work.
For almost 40 years, Kairos had been receiving government grants for programs in the Global South, from support for indigenous communities in Colombia to justice for rape victims in the Congo.
And it turns out that Kairos got a phone call. They weren't to be funded. They would be cut entirely. The reasons were not apparent for quite a while. It turns out that Mr. Kenney, in a revelatory speech made in Jerusalem, offered the reason.
We have defunded organizations, most recently like Kairos, who are taking a leadership role in the boycott. I take it that some of the Canadians who are here, in the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign.
There's one problem with this allegation. Kairos Canada played no such role. In fact, after a long internal debate, the coalition had come out against the boycott campaign in a policy statement made public a year earlier. There may be an explanation for the government's confusion, a pro-boycott statement from another group called Kairos. But that was a Christian coalition called Kairos Palestine, no connection to Kairos Canada.
So the minister got his facts wrong, and $7 million worth of aid for countries, for humanitarian work in foreign countries, was cut as a result of a factual error. Would you be concerned if that was the case?
I think I mentioned to you before that I don't practice providing comments on things where the reporter talking to me is the only source I have for that. Inevitably, some kind of judgment calls will be made.
And they'll be based upon the point of view.
They should be based on facts, right?
Well, they should be based upon, inevitably, they will be based upon the point of view that the government has the policy point of view it has. That's just the way these things will always work.
It's well known that the Harper government doesn't shy away from a political scrap. Perhaps its fierce stand on Israel is not an anomaly, but rather just how it plays the game. Its critics may call it bloody-minded, its supporters call it principled. Whichever it is, this administration sees Middle East policy not as a delicate balancing of different interests, but rather as a highly partisan contest. And it clearly has no interest in the role of referee.
Governments have always felt sort of ill-appreciated in their efforts. But none of them have ever decided on the strength of that we'll just remove that voice altogether. And this government appears to be on that path.
So I grew up here in Scarborough, in this suburb outside of Toronto. This is the first school I ever went to. So the first day of school, I guess I was 5, 6 years old, walking through the front doors for the first time. My sister and I were the only Jewish students in the school, maybe the only Jewish students that ever went to this school. On day one of school, we walked through these doors and there was a swastika carved right here in the front door. And it stayed there all year. It was carved deep in the wood. The school, I think they wanted to do something about it, but they just didn't know what to do. There was no mystery about who had done it. It was a kid who he made our lives hell all that year. But the school had no policy. There was no process. There was no procedure. There was no debate in society about anti-Semitism. Finally, my parents pulled us out of school. We learned at home for a few months. 1972. Fast forward almost 40 years, and you can find the fight against anti-Semitism here, at a gala dinner in Ottawa's Museum of Civilization.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've been warned repeatedly, and we've been admonished to take action. I would suggest, if not us, who? If not now, when? Thank you.
With $500,000 of help from the Government of Canada, politicians and experts from around the world have gathered for a conference of the Interparliamentary Coalition for Combating Anti-Semitism. The event features a Nobel Prize winner.
Since 1945, I was not as afraid as I am now.
Canadian cabinet ministers.
We are reminded of the historic roots of this ancient and pernicious hatred. But the signs are all around us.
Even Canada's Prime Minister.
We must be relentless in exposing this new anti-Semitism for what it is.
The conference is clearly designed to have maximum political impact here in Canada. But there's one fact that complicates the narrative being woven. Even those closest to the fight say that anti-Semitism is no mortal threat in Canada today. There is no wave of anti-Semitism in Canada.
No, absolutely not. No, it's funny. I've heard people who have criticized us saying that we think this, but no, there is absolutely no spike in the kinds of anti-Semitic incidents that I think appall us.
No, I don't think anti-Semitism is a huge problem in Canada. In fact, as I've written, I think Canada is probably the least anti-Semitic country in the entire world, including Israel.
And I thought that this might appear as a kind of psychological disconnect. Because what we would be discussing would be global anti-Semitism, but it would be taking place in the Canadian arena, and people would look at it through the Canadian prism and say, you know, why are we doing this?
Critics of the conference and the coalition hosting it think they have the answer to that question.
It can only be seen as some political charade to counter what clearly is a growing sense that Israel needs to be criticized, deserves to be criticized.
If you say criticism of Israel is anti-Semitism, then you can argue that there's a problem because Israel does have a public relations problem in Canada on their hands.
When 1.5 million people are stuck in an open air prison,
It's true that the Palestinian call for boycott, divestment, and sanctions against Israel is gaining support in Canada. In the past 5 years, each Israeli military action has been met with bigger protests than the last. And Israel is watching it all closely. Here's how one senior Israeli diplomat views Canada.
The most important arena in the world for this new campaign, or rather new battlefield, that on one hand have all those who wants to delegitimize Israel, and on the others, all those who wants to present it in its full colors.
Jewish organizations embrace the idea that Canada is a key battleground in the fight over Israel's legitimacy.
A country's prime minister is uniquely well-placed to observe all of this.
In this context, the Ottawa conference is another counterattack. And the BDS movement is clearly considered a high-value target, the poster child for the new anti-Semitism.
Well, its substance is as crude as ever. Its method is now more sophisticated. It targets the Jewish people by targeting the Jewish homeland, Israel, as the source of injustice and conflict in the world, and uses perversely the language of human rights to do so.
In 2005, the first Israeli Apartheid Week was held at the University of Toronto.
You have the leading political figures in Israel accepting this situation.
Despite its characterization by critics as a hate fest, the majority of its events are lectures, often low-key, as academic as they are political.
5 years after the call has been made, BDS has become a term that now has global resonance.
This annual campus event has now spread to more than 60 cities worldwide. And more than any other factor, it is the use of the word apartheid in relation to Israel that sparks passionate debate.
You loosely throw the word apartheid around, and then you label every Jew that supports the state of Israel as a racist.
It is essentially a bludgeon used to silence critics of Israeli atrocities and of Western support for them.
That a Jewish state should not exist as a Jewish state, that today, for many Jews, is now the epitome of what is anti-Semitism.
Israel does exist. If you look at any map, Israel is on there. It's actually Palestine that isn't. If you also look at any map today, South Africa is on the map. It's the apartheid that was dismantled.
But if you say that Israel, as an apartheid state, must be dismantled, then you're getting to the point where you're denying its right to exist, and that part becomes anti-Jewish.
Do you want Israel to disappear?
I think Israel can continue to exist and not implement apartheid policies against the Palestinian people. It's apartheid that we're against.
The fact that verbiage is being used on campus is intimidating and causes an atmosphere of fear on campus.
And it is on campus where the most intense debates are taking place. Some Jewish students say they feel threatened. Meanwhile, some pro-Palestine students say they're facing intimidation from a controversial group that has re-emerged in Canada.
In the one hand, a Torah. In the other hand, strength.
They're quite aggressive. They scream unbelievably racist comments. They have physically attacked our organizers. Their level of violence is escalating.
The JDL was founded by Rabbi Meir Kahana in the 1970s. The political party that bears his name was banned in Israel after one of his followers murdered 29 Palestinians at prayer in Hebron. In the United States, an FBI terrorism report called the JDL a violent extremist organization after its leaders were indicted in a plot to bomb a mosque and assassinate a congressman. In Canada, the group operates openly from this rundown building in North Toronto. Its leader claims Kahana as his mentor.
It's our land, and the only time there's going to be peace in Israel is when the Islamic world will come to terms with that reality and apologize to the Jewish people for the desecrations that they've committed over the centuries and the nerve to erect a mosque on the Temple Mount.
The fact that the JDL exists in Canada isn't what's remarkable. What's remarkable is the way in which mainstream Jewish organizations have refused to seriously address their presence.
I'm not aware of the JDL undertaking any activities that would give rise to suggestions that they were engaged in things that contravene Canadian law.
You have been described as a violent group.
Well, I don't know what we have done that says we're a violent group.
JDL upholds the principle of Barzal Iron.
Yeah, third.
The need to both move to help Jews everywhere and to change the Jewish image through sacrifice and all necessary means, strength, force, and even violence.
Yeah, but you got to understand what violence is in the proper context. I mean, then you might as well close down every single martial arts club because they're violent.
So you're just equating yourself to a martial arts club?
I'm saying, well, the concept of self-defense is understood and respected.
In the Canada where I grew up, the country's relationship with Israel rarely surfaced in the national conversation. Today, the volume has been turned way up. Leading politicians seem sometimes to be competing to offer the strongest support to one side in the Middle East's defining conflict. And with accusations of anti-Semitism flying, politicians who are critical keep their heads down, watching from the safety of their perch on Parliament Hill, while it's people in the streets who are the ones expressing opposition to Israel's policies. And Canada's Prime Minister? He's pressing the case even further, casting support for Israel in terms reminiscent of the Bush era, an epic struggle of good versus evil.
But we do know that there are those today who would choose to do evil if so permitted. Thus, we must use our freedom to confront them and their anti-Semitism at every turn.
The Canadian government has what I call an ignorance-based foreign policy.
This is the paradox of freedom. That awesome power, that grave responsibility to choose between good and evil.
They're not interested in knowing complexities. I'm not saying they should all take my position, but they should understand the world is a complex place and they don't see it that way.
You have to really start from scratch. You're starting at A, Palestinians are human, B, they're not all terrorists, and then the conversation has to begin.
But when Israel, the only country in the world whose very existence is under attack, is consistently and conspicuously singled out for condemnation, I believe we are morally obligated to take a stand.
You know, we're human beings, and sometimes we're going to engage in these battles, and, you know, the rest of the world will decide who the winner is somewhere down the line.
For them, the world is a simple place, and the simplicities are all the wrong ones. It's very, very disappointing and very dangerous.